Now, this is the second of several messianic profiles that we have upcoming. The first profile was the back to the Psalms 21. Was considering Messiah and his role as Jehovah's King. This back to the Psalms, Psalm 22 profile, takes on the consideration that before Messiah could ever be king in the sense that Jehovah most needed him to be, that Messiah was going to have to suffer as Jehovah's lone messianic servant. This essential matter regarding Messiah is nearly incomprehensible to most of us, given that it runs opposite to our human perceptions of power and authority, and even our theological notions of divinity. Suffering servants do not become kings in our way of thinking. No. Powerful people that make their enemies to suffer and force into being their servants become kings. When it comes to our Christian claims of the divinity of Jesus Christ, you'll have to admit that it's a scandalous idea to, in effect, be saying that divinity comes down to earth and takes on human form for the purpose of suffering in order to be raised from death so that he can once again reign as messianic king. On the other hand, it's also a very beautiful idea that Christ our King isn't just a king because of his divinity or his namesake or his position in the architecture or structure of all creation, but is all the more king because he became like unto us, was tempted as we are, suffered as we do, even more. Yes, it might even be considered glorious that Christ is not just a king by royal inheritance, though that might be true, that is true, but that he paid for the right to that position by the sacrifice of his own sweat and blood and his very living eternal being. Psalms 22, verses 3 through 5 read, "But thou art holy, thou that inhabitest the praises of Israel. Our fathers trusted in thee, they trusted, and thou didst deliver them. They cried unto thee and were delivered. They trusted in thee and were not confounded." In whom did our fathers trust? Jehovah, yes. Even more than that, though, the fathers trusted that Jehovah, as promised and promised and oathed, made covenant, was going to provide a seed of his own through whom not only the seed of Israel, plural, would be blessed, but also the people of all nations be blessed. This was an unconditional covenant Jehovah made with Abraham. Jehovah alone walked through the cutting, indicating that this covenant would be upon Jehovah's shoulders alone. So when the fathers are said to have trusted thee, they are trusting not only that Jehovah will see each of them personally through the daily affairs of their lives, Jehovah would at the same time keep to his solemn covenant made to Abraham regarding his Jehovah seed or Messiah. And on neither account have these fathers been confounded. They cried unto thee and were delivered. Verse 5. Many times, many generations throughout the history of Israel, Israel needed to be delivered. Delivered in a good sense in that they were delivered from an exceeding jealous and oppressive Egypt. Delivered in not such a good sense in that because of their doubts and their fears and their rebellious murmurings, they were kept in the wilderness some 40 years before being delivered into the promised land. Delivered in a terrible sense in that they shamefully drove the nation down into the depths. You know, that their temple had been destroyed and that their people had been taken into Babylonian hands, captive. They cried out to Jehovah, the Almighty One. Remember, though, that the majority of times that their cries were cries of repentance, for they had gone astray, brought slowly to suffer their own consequences, delivered at the first sign of their repentance. Is this in any way similar to the cries day and night of the Messiah talked about here? Messiah, the suffering servant, suffering at these father's children's hands? So why is it that Jehovah can hear to deliver such a stiff-necked people and deliver them so often when Messiah is not heard and by all human appearances is left hanging on a cross forsaken? Perhaps the better question to this is, what exactly was Messiah crying to Jehovah for Jehovah to do? Are we to think that Messiah was sick and tired of being this suffering servant being called for, or that he had come up with a better plan than this to achieve the same salvation for mankind scale result? Are we to think that this Messiah came into this not knowing what to expect and quickly became overwhelmed with it all? That he thought himself somehow above all this, and that now he expected Jehovah to reach in and grab hold and do something different about it? I fear that many of us think that when Jesus prayed, such as in Mark 14:36, he prayed, "Abba, Father, all things are past possible unto thee. Take away this cup from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what thou wilt." When he prays that, I fear that we think that Jesus was having second thoughts or was trying to change his father's mind about this. That's what we would have prayed for, is it not? The emphasis Jesus gives in this prayer is on, quote, "not what I will, but what thou wilt." Not, quote, "take away this cup from me," as can be seen by the word, quote, "nevertheless." Let's get this straight. The true test of obedience is not whether we wish to do what is being asked of us to obey. The test is to obey what is being asked of us, regardless of how we might feel about it, no matter how much personal sacrifice it takes. This is not a prayer of desperately trying to change God's mind. It's a prayer of intended obedience, no matter what the sacrifice. And just so you know, this was a most costly and painful personal sacrifice. "But thou hearest not," verse 2. Are we saying that the Almighty of Almighties did not hear Messiah's prayer? Are we saying that the Almighty did not have the power to do anything about this? Didn't Jesus claim in 14:36? He said, "Abba, Father, all things are possible unto thee." All things are possible for God. You've probably prayed or said something very similar along the way, haven't you? You must be fairly convinced of this. Here's the real question, though. Are all things probable to happen with God? No, only the right things. Are all possible probabilities right for God to do? Well, here's Psalms 22:3. It says, "But thou art holy, O thou that inhabitest the praises of Israel." What is right and what is holy? That is what we should always be expecting from Jehovah.